Fashion Rule. Do we have battery? Or not?
Nope.
Cool. Hi, Rosa, you're an alcoholic.
Hi, Rosa.
My name is Rosa, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Rosa. Jälle Ironosk.
It's beautiful to be here on this Sunday morning with you guys. And I was just thinking yesterday when Jennifer was talking, and she got like 31 years sober, and she was talking about, I think she was talking about like religion and all the stuff that she's been like up to in the 31 years she's been sober. And I'm at the crystal states now. I got my obsidian skull here, dragon skull. So, but I will get past that, I think. But I have it now for strength. But, oh wow, it's my beautiful friends from Iceland. So many of us, it's not because, you know, we're so much more alcoholics than Norwegians. It's just more acceptable to be an alcoholic. And like everybody in Iceland knows what AA is. And everybody, like every other person has gone to rehab and stuff like that. But because it's free, of course. And I'm going to tell you my story. So, where to begin? What's a great sobriety date, maybe? Let's start there. It's 16th of September, 2001. And everybody remembers what happened on the 11th, right? I had everything to do with that. Let's make that clear. I was really insane. But I will come back to that. I am the youngest of seven siblings. My father had two children before he met my mother. And my mother had three children, all with a separate man, before she met my dad. And together they had me and my older brother. So I'm the youngest. So when I was growing up, I always had a broken bone. Always. There was a little bit of fighting. A little bit of, like, we used to live in this, you know, big buildings with big, heavy doors. And I was trying to chase my siblings and put my fingers in. And so I always had a broken something. And I have this picture of me, and I often look at it. I'm not 3 years old. I have... like my underwear on, really hippie. It was 1980. Yeah, it was around 1980, 81 when this picture was taken. And I had recently cut my hair at that time. So it's all just, the picture is, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's me. But I can look at that baby today. And I also had a cast on my leg from toes up to my, like, ass. I had a, like, yeah, a big cast on my leg. And... I was not taken care of in the sense of my mother and father are not alcoholics. My siblings are not alcoholics. My parents worked a lot. I kind of raised myself. Well, I have a sister in the house. It was me, my brother, and my sister. The other ones were so, like, grown up, they were just moved out of the house when I was a baby. But I wasn't taken care of in the sense of I needed care or I needed teaching. I needed, like, shit, like children do, as I raise my children today. But it was okay. I was like a happy, wild child. I was really wild. I probably would have gotten many diagnoses if I were a child today. I was up and over, all over the place, getting lost, running away from home, making fires in the mountains and, you know, smoking cigarettes in the later years. I was raised in a small sea village in the Westfjords of Iceland. I think now there are like 250 people living there, so it's really small. But at that time when I was growing up, it was like 500 people, a lot of... people coming from both other countries to work in a fish factory. It was like blooming in alcohol. It was blooming in, work. And everybody just showed up for work. And the weekends always, everybody was like drunk. But my parents, as I said, they were not like drinking, or I hardly ever saw alcohol. And I hardly ever saw them drinking. But nevertheless, I am an alcoholic. And I started drinking when I was 12 years old. And just to make that clear, that in this little town, I was good at school, I was in sports, I was really open, I loved giving speeches, I loved to be in acting. I was not like many alcoholics describe themselves as being really in themselves and not finding themselves. At least I thought. I was really outgoing, outspoken, and probably often more outspoken than I should have been. But when I started drinking, I just got more outgoing and more outspoken. And the first drink I took was at a concert in Reykjavik. And from that time, I liked the effects that it did to me. I liked the, I don't know, because before that time, I could talk to boys. I was like, hey, you want to, get in the closet or something? But it really helped me in a sense of forgetting something I kind of really didn't know was there. Because as a child, I had been molested and I shut it off. And shut it completely off. Completely off. I loved my dad. And my father and mother got a divorce around that time when I was 12, when I started drinking. And my mother moved away and I wanted to stay in my hometown and live with my dad. And he was sick. He had a lung disease. And so I was kind of in the situation of being his caretaker. And I remember, and I always take this example of, I didn't know that alcohol had like taken the power of me. I had given my power to alcohol. My dad asked me, I had been planning on a camping tour and with my friends, and he said to me, could you please stay at home because I feel I'm getting sick, I need you. But as much as I loved my dad, of course, I'm an alcoholic, I went camping and drank. So I'm going to try to, because I only have an hour. I can talk forever about me, like Jennifer and many others have talked about. I love talking about myself. But my older brothers also lived at some points in this town, and they were smuggling in, and it's called lanti. It's like, I don't know if you have a word for it in Norway. Do they? Yeah. Akkurat. Hjemmebrød. Yeah. So, it was kind of clear from early on that I was drinking more than my buddies, my friends, especially my friends that were girls. And my brother, who was 3 years older than me, he was really big. I drank like more of alcohol than he did when we were drinking. So I have this physical allergy also, that I always need more and more and more. I cannot just drink one. That's not an option. Because I really want to get on the table, topless, dancing, And it was really, really fun all the time. And my friends loved me because I was really out there. I was the, you know, the party animal. I went into boarding school when I was 16, and like 80% of the kids there smoked hashish, and I had been writing some poetry and stuff, and when I started smoking hashish, I just, oh my God, this is wonderful, I'm going to write some more poetry, this is good shit. And so I did, and nine months later, I'm in my first rehab. There was a strike for a teacher strike in the school, and I started working in this fish factory in my old hometown, and I went like into another town, tried some mushrooms, some hashes, and just always drinking. It was like crazy. Yeah, I was 17. I'm just a fucking baby, you know. And and I was renting an apartment with my friend, and she was trying to get me to stop and making these really comments about coming home, and the place was a mess because I had a party whole weekend. And I had like many groups of friends. There was this lady in this town that nobody knew was smoking hashish, but she was really like into a big smuggling import, like ring, smuggling hashish into Iceland. It was just, nobody knew that she was a part of this. Well, she was arrested, like, I think 2 years later or something. But nobody knew that I was smoking hashish with her. And then I was smoking hashish with these guys, my best buddies. And then I was smoking sometimes hashish, trying to get my girlfriends to smoke with me. And always the alcohol was always there because it had to be. And my friend knew, and it's so amazing. She's a Avhengig. She's a codependent. Her dad, who was an alcoholic, he was sober for 30 years, and she found him 2 years ago. He had collapsed, like relapsed, and he shot his head off with a. He was a farmer. And so if you're not doing this program, that can happen. Sorry. But yes, he was, and her sister was also, had been sober for 1 or 2 years. And I asked her at one point, because I had tried to stop. I really tried to stop a couple of times. You know, I'm not gonna drink. I'm just gonna do it. I'm not gonna drink. I'm gonna be a good girl. And the longest phase was 9 days. It was 9 days. So she arranged for me, called her sister, who got me into my first rehab at the age of 17. So I went into this rehab at 17, like this, you know, just small town village girl coming into where the junkies and the drug dealers and all the big people from Reykjavik and stuff like that. And I really could not see that I was one of them. But somehow I realized I was supposed to be there. It was like 10 days in this hospital unit and then 30 days in this country old school unit, the rehab. And I didn't realize that I had any fault, like faults. Yeah, I didn't see that I really did think I was excellent. And in all ways, like, I fell in love with a man that was a drug dealer. And he was 12 years older than me. And he was missing some teeth. And his hair were like getting a little bit thin. But I was completely in love with him. And I made a best friend. She was the same age as me. She was had been, you know, a junkie for a couple of years. And I was like, whoa, that's serious stuff. But I went after this rehab to AA because I was told to. Nothing kind of happened in this rehab except that, you know, I put the cork in the bottle and that was it. There was no, like, change inside of me. There was no, like, nothing. nothing kind of happened. And I was told to go to AA, and I went back to my old hometown, and I had to go like two towns away to get to an AA meeting, and it was just crap. AA was just crap. We had the steps like on a, you know, on some paper on the wall, and you know, the traditions were there, but nobody was doing nothing except talking about how much they did fish that day at sea, or their washing machine was broken, or whatever, their wife was pathetic. And so that's what I did. But I just talked about fun things, like I was just driving everybody to the dance, and I was in this party, but I was sober, right? And I was just like still abusing myself with men, like I couldn't stop that. But so I was kind of basically, I didn't change at all. Nothing changed except I didn't drink any longer. And it lasted 9 months. Then I had moved to Reykjavik. I was going to go to Víðagörðurnar. Yeah? What's that? College? English? I don't know. And I went to live with my mom. And I called this friend of mine that was with me in the rehab, the junkie, and asked if we could go to a meeting together, because, you know, that's what I was supposed to do, right? In the back of my mind, there was this, maybe I'm not going to that meeting with her. Maybe we will get drunk together. Maybe I will try some new stuff I haven't tried before. But no, I'm going to a meeting, right? But there was this voice, there was this insanity, right? This insanity that kind of took over or something. Because I remember it being there. But I was going to not drink. And I went to her house. She lived close by to my mom in Reykjavik. And we were just talking, catching up and stuff like that. And the meeting was supposed to start at 9 in the evening. That's how we do it in Iceland. We always, you know, are up late. But it passed 9. And she was like, oh, fuck, we missed the meeting. What should we do? So I relapsed. And I tried some harder stuff. I tried some amphetamines for the first time. She just called a friend. And it's amazing how I don't really know what kind of took over. You know, I always, when I was a child, I always wanted to be an actress. And the actress just came in like, boom, at that time. I just became like, I was still sober. But I was using hard drugs almost every day for almost a year. I was just, yeah, I quit school because the only lesson I was still, you know, going to was history, because I love history. But that's not enough. I flunked, you know, because I didn't show up for anything else. So I just started working. It was a crazy ride time. This is like I felt like I was the queen of Reykjavik. I went to all these clubs dressed in, I don't know what. It's just like plastic stuff or something, like just showing off my body, because I was doing, you know, harder stuff. So I kind of got skinny and long hair. And it was just, oh my God, I really did feel like a queen for a long time. And I met the guy from the rehab, and we said, ooh, are you still smuggling drugs? Oh yeah, let's hook up. So I moved in with him. And but then he had to go to jail. That was kind of bad. He was in jail for like 3 months or something. So I just took regular trips to the jail, smuggling drugs into the prison. Never got caught, because I'm a really good actress, right? I don't know nothing. And I always played this, you know, no, I'm just from Bíldudalur. That's a really small town in the West. I don't know nothing. I don't know these people in this party. I don't know nothing. I really did. I'm a good actress. then something crazy happened that changed my life forever. I did LSD and with my friend, the junkie. And I lost it. I lost connection. And it was one time. It was one time. I started seeing things. I started hearing things. I started thinking things like I were Jesus and stuff like that. I really got delusional. And of course, my my employee at that time, I was working in a fish factory in Reykjavik, and he couldn't have me working there because I just cried like for hours, or I laughed for hours. I really couldn't do anything. I couldn't communicate with people. I just read your mind the whole time. And this employee of mine, he knew my mom, and they used to go to school together, and he called her and said, "I'm driving Rosa home." And I was at that time living in the apartment that my boyfriend had, and they my mom, my dad, and my brother, they came and picked me up. And I kind of don't really know what was going on. They drove me to the hospital, and I was talking to this doctor and this nurse, because my parents, they thought I was sober. And nobody knew. I had been having this play on for almost a year. And so I talked to the doctor and the nurse alone, and I could tell them that I had been using hard drugs, this LSD, and they were like, "Okay, so in the tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, just be here." I didn't even bring a toothbrush because I didn't know they were gonna. I didn't know I was just gonna be there. Like, I just showed up 9 o'clock in the morning the day after. It was the 1st of May, 1997, and they took my independency away. They locked me in for 17 days, like I couldn't meet anybody I knew. And why am I crying now? Well, because, of course I'm crying, because it's not humane to do this. And what it did, made the delusional mind of mine more delusional, because I really then thought I was really, really special, and I thought they were growing black tulips from my urine. Like, it was just crazy. I kind of lost it, and and I was there for. And my mother, she went like bazonkers and talked to some really, really big guy in the, that runs the hospital thing. And she was like, "This is not all right, not meeting my daughter for 17 days. And I couldn't smoke cigarettes or nothing. It was crazy. and finally, they ended up seeing me. And I remember seeing these doctors and this stuff. And I really couldn't communicate at all. And at the level of being in the reality, I could communicate about all kinds of other stuff that you were not aware of. But, yeah, I ended up being there for total 9 months at this hospital unit, the psycho ward. And a lot of shit happens. I can tell you a lot of really, 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 really funny stories, sad stories, all kinds of shit. My friend Valdemar, we met there, and we were both Jesus at the time, which is kind of fun, because we also had Gummi Jesus. He was also Jesus. He passed away, but yeah, and they, like I said, they took my independency away. I was constantly running away, You know, I have these stories of, because I shaved all my hair off and the medication that they give me, I like gained 30 kilos. So it was just crazy. And I couldn't be out in the sun because of the medication. They would burn my skin. I was like really fiery red head, you know, all shaved up. And like having this really hot winter sweater and like a coat, winter coat in the middle of the fucking summer running away from the hospital. It was crazy. But they always got me back. I came back because I was like, oh, I need to sleep. And then I came back and this kind of went on for these 9 months. And then they decided to send me to asylum in the country where they have like really just old men, been there for 40 years, crazy old men. And there was this young lady, like, yeah, it was not good, man. And I had my like 19-year-old birthday in the hospital unit and 20-year-old birthday in the asylum. And the next years are like covered in all kinds of tries to get sober. They finally let me out. I had like this card that I would never be able to work again, and I would just be crazy. That was just, I got the diagnosis paranoid schizophrenic. And so I was paranoid schizophrenic trying to get sober all the fucking time. And I had like, in total, I had 13 rehabs. But I'm including the times where I was put in, like, asylum hospitals. So, because that's kind of a rehab thing also. And I think I tried every rehab center in Iceland in 4 years, 5 years. And I don't know how many times I went to an AA meeting trying to get sober. I don't know. That's, you know, hundreds of times. So I'm going to go back to AA, sit down after the meeting. Oh, I'm going to get drunk. That was kind of normal. I didn't hear anything. I didn't understand anything. So back in the year 2001, I knew that I couldn't stop. I just had this crazy feeling inside, I could not stop. I tried so many times. I got 14 months. That was my longest time. I got 14 months. And I remember the time when I started drinking again after these 14 months. I had been in, I thought it was cool just to be in English meetings. So I was going to English meetings on Friday nights in Reykjavik, and they always said, yeah, keep coming back. It works if you work it. But nobody said me what to work or nothing. Okay, keep coming back. It works if you work it. But I didn't know. And I remember when I started drinking after these 14 months that maybe, you know, my hair has grown back. I've, you know, been using some Herbalife stuff, you know, losing some weight. And maybe I can just drink. I can just drink some red wine and stuff like that. So I tried. And I just drank for 3 months, like just heavy drinking. I met this bartender who became like my, not boyfriend, we were just drinking together. But and then some cute guy came and said, you know, do you use anything other than alcohol? And I was like, what do you got? Okay, then I just use alcohol and, you know, white stuff, not the cannabis stuff. That's not good for me. And then it's just, I have no control. And this thought, this insanity I have no control when it comes. No, zero. You know, there are so many times I really, really, really didn't want to drink again. I made promises I was never going to drink again. I remember standing looking at my brother and I said, "Nonni," and there were stars. And I said, "I promise to the stars I'm never going to drink again." I don't know, maybe it was 3 days I was drunk again. I have no power. But you know, inside, I really want it. I want it. I tried. So many fucking times. All kinds of versions of it. Trying to control it or not control it. Or like, fuck it, I'm going to show them. I'm just going to go drink again. They don't want me anymore. Or whatever. And 2001, I had gone a week to another asylum, shit, and I kind of ran away. I just said, I don't want to be here anymore, so I went. And I went 10 days in Vogur, like the hospital rehab center in Iceland, and I don't know how many times I went to. And there had been this, like, awakening in AA in Iceland. But I hated these guys. They were, like, loud and funny and, you know, ha 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 ha! And I hated that. And I had been hearing it when I was going to the English-speaking back in the days. I was like, shh, shh, we're trying to have a meeting here. This is no fun. This is serious stuff. And I tried sometime to get a sponsor, and she just wanted to put some tarot cards or something. And another sponsor asked me to, like, get baptized in this Christian shit. So that's kind of, I tried all kinds of stuff. Nothing worked. And in August 2001, I had written down some things, and I still have it. I have a date on it. The date is August something, 2001. And it says, all the things that I want and I wish. A family, education, kids, travel, all this stuff that regular people have. And I knew I would never have it. Never. But my higher power, he has a way. Through men, right? Because I've always been kind of a sucker for men. Oh my God, that sounded bad. But on the 16th of September, I had been drinking a lot that night. And I got invited to a party. It was like 4 o'clock in the night. And I was walking with these men to a party where there is this silver-colored Porsche car that stops on the road. And they say, "Hey, you." And I was like, go to them. And they say, "Oh, sorry, we thought you were someone else. And I hear this voice. It was not one of the regular voices that I was just always hearing. That said, ask them to drive you home. I was not going home. You know, I was going to a party with some boys and shit. Because I didn't have any friends at that time, really. Nobody wanted me. My parents didn't want me. Nobody wanted me anymore. So when I got invited to do stuff with people, of course. Still, I was fun and everything. I felt miserable all the fucking time. But I don't know why I listened. But I asked them to drive me home. And these guys were working the 13th step in AA. But I didn't sleep with them or nothing. But it's funny, or it's heartwarming to look back and just, yeah, it's funny. It's funny that God knows me. And The day after, I was going on a date with one of these guys. Well, I thought. He actually took me to this cafe where his friends, girlfriends from AA, were drinking coffee after an AA meeting. And he just put me with them, and then he walked away to his friends. And they started questioning me. Oh, do you have a sponsor? Are you new? Because we had this fire awakening in AA. Arno was there with his AA book always under his arm, marching on, you know, hitting people in the head. I am so grateful for Arnór. We're still buddies today. He's been a really, really much support to me. And, wow, 35 minutes, okay. Speed up, because now we're getting to the, you know, fun stuff, the sobriety and shit. The first step, right. Bjartur here to remind me of the schedule, how we do it in AA. I was talking to these ladies, and I'm like, yeah, we need a sponsor, go to a meeting and stuff. And I was like, I tried everything, you know. But for the first time, I think it was the day after that, I went to an AA meeting, and I heard for the first time what it is to be an alcoholic. You know, been going to all these rehabs, been going to these meetings, and for the first time, I sit there, and I was like, yeah, I cannot stop drinking. I cannot. I don't have the power. I am powerless. What do we do with that? We seek power. And I remember it was the 19th, so I'd been sober for 3 days, when I went on my knees. And at that time, I was living with my mom, and they had this concert because of the 9/11 thing. There was this concert on the TV, and I remember going on my knees. And I said, God, would you please send a lightning through the roof and kill me now? Or let me live and be sober. That was my first, second, and third step. There and then. I had realized that I did not have power. That my life was fucking a mess and had been for a long time. And I had like 2 weeks to figure out where I was supposed to stay, because my mother was not able to have me. She was moving out of her apartment, and I could not live with her anymore. My father had been in a hospital for a long time, and he was dying at that time. And I am there on my knees, talking to something, whatever it is. And I could feel something here in my heart. I found my higher power. It came to me that night. And a friend called in the middle of the night, the same night, full of shit, just been, I don't know, taking some crazy pills or stuff, and I started reading from the AA book for him. I was like, hey, shit, man, you know, I'm going to try this AA one more fucking time. And I started reading from the AA book. I don't know why I did that. 3 days sober, I'm trying to help somebody. What the fuck? Yeah. And it was not something I decided. It was something that was just my higher power, right? And things kind of, I believe that my higher power just came and said, okay, Rosa, I'm going to take care of you. You have given me your will. I'm going to take care of you. And I did every fucking thing everything I was supposed to do. Except I got in a relationship. When I had been sober for 3 weeks, and he was sober 2 weeks, and it was like love at first sight, right? No, he was not my type, so it was kind of crazy. But and like I said, I didn't have a home like 2 weeks after I got sober. I was like just going around with AA folks and just trying to be somewhere. I remember my sponsors, he said, you can have a one room here, because there were some AA girls renting this apartment. And then they kind of opened the door on me and my ex-husband, like, fucking. And they were like, oh, you have to go, Rosa. That's not good. Whatever. But Norwegians are so tough. Okay. I didn't have a home. My father was dying. I got pregnant. I lost a baby. And this is all in my first 3 months. My father died, and I lost a baby, and I didn't have a home. But I was still sober, because I was going to every meeting. I was reading the AA book with my sponsor. I started working these steps, making the fourth step and the fifth step, and started making my amends. I did get time to make an amends on my dad before he died, and I hold his hand when he died. And the thing is that I didn't know at that time that my father really sexually abused me when I was a child. It didn't come to me until I had been sober for 10 years that my sister came to me and said, I have to talk to you. And when she said it, I was just immediately almost put into, because they had thought I was getting a stroke, because I got paralyzed on the face and here. But the thing is, the memories were coming that I had just closed all the way. I didn't remember anything. So it was maybe good that I didn't know at that time or whatever. I don't know. Don't know. But I did hold his hand when he died, and I was there for my whole family. And this is kind of, I hadn't been able to do anything for many years before I started doing the program. So for my family, for my mother, for my siblings to see me at that point, it was crazy. I had made my amends, and they were seeing something. They didn't trust me completely, but I'm going to try to pack things up. But yeah, then I just, I don't know how to pack these years into something that happened. Like, I was sponsoring like tons of women through the program. Me and my ex-husband, we were actually together for 16 years, and we had 3 babies. Babies, they're young people today. but that was kind of what I was just, and I had this disability like forever, because I was still insane. And yeah, I hadn't mentioned, because when I got sober, I was really, really medicated on like medication stuff to trying to keep me normal, so I wouldn't hear the voices or see the visions or have the delusions that I had. And I had them for a couple of years still being sober. But I was doing AA. I was just full of power. And I had all the time in the world to give away what you gave me. And that just became my life. Just sponsoring women, going to all the meetings. And people were just, are you never quitting having babies? You're just always having babies on your breast in the meetings. But that was just, I had so much time to give, and I I am still passionate about giving this program away. That's what I do. That's my job. If I stop doing it, I will drink again. I have seen it so many fucking times that people get drunk again when they stop, or they hang themselves or shoot themselves because they cannot live. And I don't want to go there, because this is fairly easy to do. It is. There is nothing much to it. I just have to do it. To go on my knees in the morning and do my meditation. And like I said, I'm on the crystal thing, so I'm really meditating a lot now. and carrying the message. And I have really good friends in AA that I can always call, and they tell me the truth. I am so... Yeah, one of the things that I didn't see, you know, from the first months, I couldn't see that I was selfish or self-centered. I didn't really understand these terms, or, you know, I didn't really understand it. I really thought that I was a good girl. But, you know, 21 years later, I always say yes to my mom, because I owe her still. Fuck what I did to her. You know, all the sleepless nights, all the shit that I did, worrying and stuff like that, and my siblings. I always say yes, I'm here. I'm almost a grandmother to my sister's grandkids, because I just want to, you know, I just want to pay, give back. And... Four, 5 years ago, I had a really, really rough time in my sobriety. And I've done a lot of stuff. I have educated myself. I worked as a police officer. I've done some shit, man. It's just... 5 years ago, some shit happened between me and my husband. It was a really, really difficult time. And I had this program. I did it so much. I've never done it as much as I did then. And I think it was Jennifer yesterday that was talking about just being on her knees, like. And that was just 4 hours. I was just on my knees, just asking for help. And then I was also calling Arnor a lot. Because he also has this man. He's a man. I'm not a man. I don't understand men. Like men don't understand women, right? But I'm trying. And it's difficult for me to talk about it still, just in front of a crowd. But I was facing my biggest fears. I was told that I was getting insane, and I was starting to believe that. Am I maybe insane? I didn't eat, I didn't sleep, and I was sober. I was doing everything that I possibly could in this program. I got, therapy and stuff like that, and it ended up like, okay, I have to go to the hospital. Well, I was told I have to go to the hospital because I was going crazy again. And I met this really, really nice doctor who looked at me and listened to me. And he said, I really don't think you're crazy. I think somebody's just telling you you're crazy. And but you need to eat and you need to sleep. So he helped me in that, and I was at that time working as a police officer, and it was just an amazing thing just to talk to my boss. And it's so funny that this wreck I was suddenly being a police officer. It was just crazy. And my boss, my two bosses, they just loved me because of that. And getting some just time off, and all I knew to do was to do this program. And never did I doubt it would work. It has never, ever failed me. Never. The only thing I have to do it. I've done many 4 steps, 5 steps, 9 steps. I've done crazy shit. I know I'm not perfect, but I try and I do this program every day. And I moved, and life is such a fucking amazing adventure if you just trust your higher power. And I try to stay grounded and talk to my AA friends if I get a crazy idea or something. And when it came to moving here to Norway, and again, it was a guy, right? Soulmate. That I kind of figure out that was not my soulmate, but still I'm here. But I never doubt this program. I never doubt that my higher power is giving me assignments or stuff that I cannot handle. And often I'm like, really? Fuck, are we not done? Is this not enough? You know, I always get the ugly packages. I always get the fucking shit. Ah. But inside the package, even if it's ugly on the outside, a couple of months later you open it and you see what it really is. And you see what it's supposed to, like, mean. And you kind of get the, oh yeah, it's so I can help somebody else that's going to have the ugly packets, right? It's not always what I want, but it's always what I need. And I'm moving back to Iceland in December. And I had a house in Iceland that I just sold like a couple of months ago. And I have 2 kids that live in Iceland, a 19 and a 17-year-old. And the 17-year-old lives with a friend of mine because their dad is an alcoholic. And I don't know if it was at least when he was sober 16 years, he got drunk again. And that has been a really challenging. It's been challenging to watch my kids, especially the older ones. The younger one, he doesn't have the same perspective of his dad. But I'm trying to be everything I can. And I wish I could do something. I wish I could save him. But I've been praying for him since we got divorced, before we got divorced. I've been praying that my higher power makes him happy, makes him healthy, helps him get sober. And I also sometimes say to God, you know, fuck the fucking bastard, but help him, please. Because I can say that. My higher power knows me. And it was just 2 weeks ago. I was at a noon meeting and in Tønsberg. There were just men there. And I was talking, and suddenly I just started crying. And I said, I love my ex-husband so much. But I don't love him in the way that I would love a lover. But I love him so deeply. And The only thing I can do is still just pray and hoping or something, you know. You gotta have hope. I'm really, at the same time, I'm gonna miss my Norwegian Icelandic fucking buddies. Not fucking buddies, no, sorry. And I'm gonna miss the opportunity to get to know everybody here better. But if you're ever in Iceland, you just come and visit. My doors are always open, and that's one of the things that I was also taught when I came in here. Because there were people letting me in, inviting me for shit. You know, dinner, cakes, whatever. Listen to speakers all day long. And that's what I did. I opened my door. And if you ever are talking to somebody that is crazy or whatever, needs help, give them my number. You don't have to ask for permission from me to give my number. This is my job. This is what I do in AA. You can tell everybody out there my story, but don't go to the press with it. Understand? I'm here to help people because that helps me. This is my drug. My drug is to help others and carry the message. It gets me kind of high. It gives me God. It fills me up. My sponsee Erna, she's been sober 1 year longer than me. I don't know how that happened, but but it's just been amazing to get the chance to. I started sponsoring her in 2007, 2006. Yeah, 2004. Yeah, wow. Oh, but and then like she moved here to Norway like 10 years ago, 12 years ago or something, and we didn't stay in touch. And then she called me 3 years ago on FaceTime. Hey, Rosa, miss you so much. Can you still be my sponsor? And now I just, hey, Erna, I'm moving to you. And just to see the change in people. Everybody. I love you guys. Tack.
Thank you, Rosa. Anneli alkoholist, fortsatt. Det cirka 10 minuter om noen har någonting de vill si. Nå kan komme opp hit til talerstolen og dele. Så vær så god.
Yeah! Hæ, Bjartur, alkoholiker. Fy faen, Rosa. Happy to know you. Happy to be in the life-saving business with you. What a powerful female came to Norway. Bam! And was probably sent here to save and help start a revolution in saving alcoholics that don't know what the message is. I've been here for 12 years as well. Came here, I was 5 years sober and decided that AA was just not cool here. I thought I tried and maybe back of my mind I wanted to make the excuse that it wasn't cool so I could just stop coming. Which is very sad because I know the solution and it totally saved my life like Rosa's. Because I lived in a car and I had no hope. Yeah, now what, 12 years later or something. I had been sober for 15 years and decided that I was cured. I probably just figured out that all my childhood trauma and all my juvenile delinquent things I had taken care of with all the step work. So I'm good. I'm just going to be an Al-Anon, and maybe I'll take one jazz cigarette on the side. Just like normal people can take a glass of champagne. And I fooled everybody around me like I'm going to just do one little experiment. And I had them in the claws of this manipulation circle for 3 months over the summer. And realized that, wow, okay, the disease is just taking push-ups and waiting for me to just go back into whatever. Yeah, so it was just there waiting for me. And yeah, I got like a second chance of life and really got into figuring out what I did wrong. How did I manage to be sober for 15 years and not get this super spiritual awakening I feel I'm having now? How did I manage just to be sober on 50% of the program, 70%? I'm here saying jokes, and I make a coffee, I sell some books or whatever. I wasn't doing the whole triangle of like, I don't know how it is in recovery, the service, and us. I forgot how it is. Summoning, what's that in English? Unity, yeah, unity service, yeah, recovery. So I was doing unity and service a lot, but the recovery part, I was like, nah, I probably skipped. I had this third step, the higher power, which I took the power back every day at like 3 o'clock, I took it back, you know, and this heavy camp on this power struggle, and I probably skipped the sixth and seventh step of really taking my flaws and giving them to God. I took them back, lust, greed, buffet time, ice cream, whatever. I was in my flaws a lot. I used the flaws to fix myself. And then I did 8 and 9, I kind of made up. Yes, I probably did that pretty good. But 10, 11, 12, I just skipped. Nobody's checking. It's so easy to cheat in AA. It's so easy. Just put on your AA mask. Yeah, it works, it works. Yeah. So easy. Fool all you guys. And just, yeah, if you're alcoholic and you just, we are actresses, we're actors. We come in and we manipulate people. And that's easy to do when everybody's, everybody's pretending a little bit, you know. Anyway, but this 10-step of really being evig på vakt, always on the defense, wow, this whack-a-mole of character flaws that just pop up all the time, every day. More cake. No! More cake. No! You need this New York gedracht. No! But this, an 11-step, you know, who's going to check if you're really praying and meditating and if you mean it and you're actually listening? Who's checking? It's your inner truth. And just, I was so disconnected from my inner truth all these years. And I didn't have anything to give. I could say jokes. I could say welcome. Keep coming back. It works. Blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't take somebody, hey, you have a problem? Let's go do the steps. Bam. So that was missing. And I really got into, like, what is sponsoring? How do I do it? Why was I so afraid? Because I didn't know how, on what page the promises is. What is before the story of Bill or doctor's opinion? I didn't know all this. And I thought I was stupid because some teacher in the past told me I was stupid. And I believed him. But I learned it. And like Rosa was saying, it's really easy. It's just pass it on. What? And I have this pamphlet called Keep It Simple. And we're doing, like, amazing step work with people who've never done it, and even people have been here 8 years sober and like, yeah, I just keep coming back, but my life is really falling apart. I was like, yeah, you have to do the spiritual awakening thing. You're just missing the whole point, I guess. And being here for so many years and going to AA meetings and trying to be like, yeah, and just slowly seeing that AA is kind of just fading. We went to this year's seminar and it was just like old people and not really attractive. And not really, it was their club and I could feel it. Me and Rosa, we were the youngest people there and we were 40. And they're like, wow, you're really young. It's like, what is happening? I'm like, what? You haven't told them. It's like, no, you just go to NA if you're young and this is our little club and it's so wrong. It's so sad, and we have to turn this around. It's like 10% success rate in AA. And in the 40s, it was like 80%. Because a newcomer was just a guy that was new. He wasn't like, oh, do 90 meetings and then think about it. He was just the guy who didn't do the steps. And they took him and did the steps. And then he could come to the meeting because he knew what it was about. And it's like, oh, that's the whole point. Bam, I get it now. I learned the stuff and I can give it away. And we're this group of people and we have seminars. We just keep it simple and we give away the program. Let's do it. Full room. Everybody does the steps in one afternoon and they know how to help and they go out to help. It's great. And that is keep coming back. It works if you work it. If you don't know how it works, how are you going to work it? Just like Rosa said. And now I'm on fire. I want to help Norway. I want to help you help others. Because it's just like if you unplug the refrigerator, everything's fine for a couple of days and then you just don't open the refrigerator. You know. Yeah, I'll end on that.
Jag heter Anneli och är alkoholist. Tiden för delning är ju nu slut och...
Sorry.
I henhold till AAs sjunde tradition lär vi hatten gå runt och den som vill kan ge ett bidrag. Bidrag kan också ges över VIPS. Och så står det väl någon VIPS-nummer här, va?
Ja,
där också, ja, så fint. Då tackar jag för ett gott möte och för att jag fick lov att leda det. För vi ställer oss upp i en stor ring för Sinsrobönen. Ska jag läsa denna text från storboken? Överge dig till Gud slik du uppfattar Gud. Tillstå dina fel för ham och dina medmänniskor. Rydd väck förtidens vrakrester. Ge riklig av det du finner och slutt dig till oss. Vi vill vara samman med dig i andens fällskap och du vill säkert träffa någon av oss när du traskar bort över den lyckliga skebnens väg. Må Gud välsigna dig och bevara dig in till dag. Tack. Då må vi bara ställa oss i ring här.
Ja, det är bra.